Welcome back to Carrying Wayward, a Supernatural podcast for fans who aren't ready to let go and newcomers to the series who are ready to jump in. I'm Marie Vigouroux.
And I'm Drew Shulman. In this episode, we're diving into Supernatural Season 8, Episode 1, We Need to Talk About Kevin. Let's get this show back on the road. New music. It's so good.
I hope that our listeners love it as much as we do, because honestly, we're so excited about it. Now, if you haven't listened to our pregame episode, I highly recommend that you do, because in it, we talked about the little and the big changes that we're going to be making to the podcast this season, and Drew also graced us with his predictions, which so many of them are going to be proved wrong in this first episode, which is lovely.
All I have left on my plate is we might get Charlie back at some point. I hope we get Darth back at some point. The Alpha Vamp might show up. Everything else has been flushed.
We also want to remind you that I'm going to be at the Supernatural Convention in New Jersey next month in May 2024. If you see me and you feel like saying hi, please do. That's literally one of the reasons why I'm going. It's to meet other Supernatural fans. So in the next couple of weeks, we're also going to have a further announcement. So stay tuned.
This week, patrons and coffee supporters got to hear us answer the question, if you got a year off from work, how would you spend it? On the supporter-exclusive Impala Talk feed, you can go to carryingwayward.com to support us and claim your perks.
All right, so, season 8.
I liked the first episode. I am already excited for more. I think the big thing is I want more of those flashbacks, so we kind of fill in that year gap we're getting.
So you want more flashbacks, is what you're saying.
I can't believe I'm saying it, but I kind of want them.
I will remind you of that.
Damn it, I think I just shot myself in the foot.
Oh, absolutely, you did.
Like, my hopes would be that we kind of, in a short period of maybe 4 to 5 more episodes, like at a limit, kind of get the remaining flashbacks to that missing year, I'm calling it. And I like the fact that every time we get one, for the most part, it seems to be one of the brothers telling the other brother what happened, and we're just seeing it visually.
You sweet summer child. This is our new showrunner also. We've entered the Carver era.
I would love to learn more about Carver as time goes on. I'm sure we'll talk about that.
We have some notes about that in Critical Time, so we'll be talking about Jeremy Carver a little bit. Are we ready for the recap? For our first episode of season 8.
Oh, our first recap of season 8. Count me down, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, safety school.
Dean gets out of purgatory. Very little explanation, except that he's apparently carrying a vampire in his arm somehow, who he can then just spill onto their bones to give them a body. I have so many questions about this, but I like Benny, even though he's not a dog. We have Sam, who's just like living a normal life with this woman and this dog we know nothing about yet so far. Sam, who is apparently out of the game, still goes up to this cabin in the woods they have, where Dean shows up and is all like, test each other, make sure we're both safe, and yay, I'm back. Where Sam then reveals that, yeah, I haven't been looking for you this last year. I kind of just said, I'm done. Dean, not happy about this. Cass, nowhere to be seen, and apparently is lost in purgatory or dead, unclear. We find out that Kevin escaped Crowley. He actually outsmarted him, which is bloody brilliant. And he reached out to Sam, and Sam kind of said, And then Kevin kind of got drunk and pissed, and they track him down because now he feels like he's responsible again. We get a bit more information about the time in purgatory and Sam hitting a dog, which apparently is a meme I'm learning now. We do find Kevin. He's living in a church. He thinks he has a way to stop all demons from getting out of hell ever again, the end period. Crowley shows up again and kills his girlfriend slash love interest, and it looks like the three of them are on a quest now to close the gates of hell permanently. Time.
This episode was written by Jeremy Carver. It's his first one as showrunner for Supernatural, directed by Robert Singer, and it originally aired on October 3rd, 2012.
Whew. I mean, picking up the gauntlet and started swinging.
Immediately. And it, like, what I love about Carver here is that he really showed his true colors very quickly. You know, the angst is very present immediately. The brother drama is present very quickly. So we're going to explore those things as we go.
I like where it's going. I have some very specific thoughts I will say for story time. But despite those thoughts, I want to see more because I feel like it will clear things up.
I just want to remind folks that we are now entering the segment of the show where we talk about the long game, which is where we talk about things that might have to do with now, either past episodes or future episodes. So we're going to make a link with that. So much like the last change of showrunner, this episode and this season starts 1 year after the events of the season 7 finale.
As much as you've given me flack already about intrigue and flashbacks, I think having this year where both of them got to develop separate from each other and then letting us get kind of peeks into it does give a lot of interesting room for growth. And this episode already hints at that quite a bit.
The brothers grow the most when they're apart, and this was like a really great opportunity for them to grow. And like you said, we will be seeing more of that throughout the season. We do have a new splash screen. Did you notice?
It went by so quickly and I was like, oh, it's not ooze anymore. But I didn't really process what it was properly.
So it looks like symbols.
It gives me Word of God vibes. It looks like when Kevin's reading the Word of God, it's like just the letters that you can't focus on.
It's the tablets.
That did make me think that Kevin, while he's introduced very early and seems to be very prominent this season, the whole prophet and being a Word of God is going to be a lot more central to this season's plot.
Absolutely. Now, before I go into the next points, I do want to mention that I hadn't rewatched season 8 since watching the series finale, and like, I just know that I'm going to be in for it this season. I was watching it and I had to like walk up and out. Like, it was just like so much.
I don't know what part of this episode did that to you. And like, I'll be curious to again one day be able to look back at this and go like, oh, I see the connection now.
So the first thing that Dean does when he's somehow magically back from purgatory, right? At the moment, we're not quite sure how that happened. The first thing that he does is to revive a vampire that is buried next to a windmill.
I feel like we've mentioned windmills before, and I was like, I don't know why.
I know that some folks are going to get it, and some won't, and that's fine. But I promise that I'm going to come back to this eventually. It's a lot. The scene of the brothers reuniting is a direct callback to the other scene of them reuniting after Dean comes back from hell in season 4, where Sam jumps Dean and tries to like kill him because he thinks he's a demon.
It felt like a secret handshake.
Yes.
Even though I know it's you and you know it's me, we have to do the secret club handshake or else it doesn't count. I think it's like a great early like sign of the times that like Sam is like over the whole thing. He's like, I'm not gonna question this, I believe you.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if it's Sam being like done with hunting or if it's Sam just being like, it's never a fake you, it's never been a fake you, I've given up on that being a thing. It's every time someone does this, I know it's really them. Like, that's enough of a sign.
This whole episode is honestly really reminiscent of 401 Lazarus Rising, and the more I think about it, the more I realize that some of the season-long parallels are also very similar to season 4 too. So I'm, again, I am still processing what I just saw, because it's the first time that I watch it in the context of the whole show, and I'm just like, what?
I love when we can kind of look at a season and like reflect on past seasons.
Absolutely.
I like callbacks. I could see them being used as a crutch, but I think in a lot of cases, it's a nice way to kind of like reminisce on like previous scenes and scenarios and themes.
It's a technique that people use very consciously. And I think in this case, again, for all of the reasons that we mentioned in season 7, it is calling back to those earlier seasons for a reason. There's a conscious choice there that we're going to talk about in Critical Time. We find out that quote-unquote cast didn't make it. Clearly lots of stuff happened in purgatory. We don't quite know what yet.
The way this is kind of just like, it's stated and then like nothing else happens. Like Cass is just like, that's Cass's wrap on this episode. Let's move on. Makes me curious as to what is going to happen next. What happened to him? What is happening to him? Like, I have many questions, and a lot of them are about Cass.
We also find out that Sam stopped hunting, and that's going to be a big topic of conversation because Dean has big feelings about that.
I have big feelings about it with Dean. Let's put it that way.
Yes, you do too. I think we all do. Like, everybody does, because it's like, what? Kevin managed to escape from under Crowley's control and had been calling Sam for 6 months before he stopped calling.
This weirdly does so much for Kevin's character, I think, in his, like, development. Like, this is, I think, the best any medium I could think of has developed a character over, like, such little amounts of, like, literally he gets 4 voicemails and we've, like, developed him completely in, like, that much time.
Dean says that the Impala has no visible signs of douchery, which is also a callback to Lazarus Rising, where Sam had installed like a media console for his iPod, which is like a desperately 2010 sentence, by the way.
I forgot that that already happened. So when he got in the car, I was expecting like, oh, what did Sam do that is going to piss off Dean? Did he like upgrade the radio? Did he put in like an MP3 thing? Or like, what did he do to the car? So the fact that that wasn't what it was, it makes sense now because he's already done it.
The issue was just the smell. We find out, actually, about Dean's, if not hatred, then at least dislike of dogs.
Well, I mean, we've already discussed his dislike of dogs so thoroughly because of the hellhounds and his association with them and just, like, how often, like, dogs are used. Like, I mean, we've seen him be scared of a cat and a chihuahua before, but, like, the chihuahua we're able to draw more of, like, a parallel to in his fears.
We also get the I hit a dog line for the first time.
Someone mentioned to me, like I had brought it up somewhere in the Discord, and they mentioned there is a meme about it, but you can't look at it yet. But I've seen other memes of just like people reacting to Sam hitting a dog. And I'm like, what happened this season?
He hit a dog. Sam hit a dog. Dean says something about the fact that being in purgatory felt pure.
Yes, and then it's repeated at the end of the episode, and I am... Ooh, I have bad thoughts.
But so good. But so good. We get the blood phone thing for the very first time in a really long time.
That entire setup with the roommate being, like, super annoying and, like, just, like, college. And then, like, the demon possessing Channing being like, I'm so glad to be doing this finally. Like, even if I didn't have to make a call, I would make a call just to get an excuse to kill you.
It also turns out that there are more tablets. In this episode, we find out about the demon tablet, which Crowley is trying to decipher to open the hell gates, which again is a callback to the very early seasons of the show. So another callback right there. And the very same tablet also explains how to close those gates forever, which Sam and Dean are also very interested in. And again, like hell gates, very reminiscent of like season 2.
I predicted that Crowley might be our big bad and like could transition to a like be like the intro to a bigger bad. I still hold that true. I don't know if Crowley's gonna stay the big bad all season, but it kind of feels like a very classic like the boys versus demons again, which is nice. I'm intrigued to see where this goes and how we are going to deal with demons again for the first time in a while.
Don't you love our new chime?
Good. Oh, I'm loving all of this.
Go tell Jake Lionheart how amazing he is. Please just do. Please just do. We're going to tag him on Twitter and just like tell him that you love him because we do.
And listen to all of his stuff. It's great.
All right. Now let's move on to story time. The segment where we talk about the episode that we saw really as if it was something that was happening in real life and trying to make sense of that through a specific theme. And this week, our theme is responsibility. And I'm going to be real honest with you. I didn't even need to rewatch the episode to know that I wanted us to talk about this particular theme because like, yeah, it's very clear. What I didn't remember was that the word responsibility or responsible actually shows up in the dialogue, which so very rarely happens. And I'm so excited to get into these lines.
It's rare the theme takes effort to connect. The themes are always very well chosen. But this was one where it was like, oh, yeah, this was like plastered across the episode.
No spoilers to you, Drew, but like this entire season is more or less about responsibility. We'll have to keep that in mind, I think, as we go through this season. So let's just dive right in. The word responsibility comes from Latin, and it has the same root as the word like sponsor, so like to pledge. And then there's also the root r or re, you know, like it means again. So like to pledge again, to pledge back, to promise in return, to answer to respond. So like there's clearly something very like relational about responsibility. You know, we're responsible for someone or for something. And in this episode, I'd also like us to think about what responsibilities the brothers are taking on, what responsibilities they're abdicating, and like what promises they're keeping or breaking, and how that affects the relationships that they're involved in.
Sam's connection to responsibility is very intriguing in this episode. And while my biggest concern, if I don't have the full picture yet of this year off, in the event since season 7's finale, I can only go with what I know. So first is Sam's responsibility. Like, he hit a dog. And we see, like, this panic in him that seems weird is not the word I want to use, but I can't think of another word, but it seems so out of place. Like, we've never really seen Sam that panicked about something. Again, not a bad thing, just weird. You know, he's otherwise a very well-adjusted person in the context of, like, the regular world. But, like, this dog seems to have struck a nerve in him. Does this dog feel like a replacement for Dean in some emotional capacity? I don't know. And while he's almost forced to adopt this dog by the vet tech and take it with him, it feels like the hunter lifestyle is already faded in this moment, and his concerns and responsibilities is not to the human race anymore, but to himself and, by extension, this poor pupper. And it's just like that small, like, everything's kind of small potatoes now. Everything's now personal. Like, it's no longer the big picture. He could focus on him.
You know, I really love the conflict in this season between Sam and Dean, because it's actually really compelling. And part of the reason why I find it so compelling is because, like, they each have some really strong points. I find it very reminiscent of a real-life conflict, and I kind of love that about it. Totally agree that hitting a dog really feels like small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. And like, you and I, Drew, also have the advantage here of like watching this almost directly after finishing season 7. Like, we really didn't take that much of a break. So we really have the full context of like what happened to Sam in season 7. And it's still very fresh with us. Like, Sam has lost control over his life entirely, right? At this point, like, that's how we left him in season 7 in the finale. So it makes sense to me that he would lose his goddamn mind over hitting a dog. Like, I feel like we talked about that not too long ago, but sometimes, like, it's the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? Like, I think hitting the dog was kind of like his straw, Sam's straw. You know, he even tells the vet tech, like, you're not sure what. This is an animal hospital. You save animals. Save this animal. Which is so very reminiscent of Dean, like, screaming, I do my job, now you do yours, to the hospital staff when Bobby is dying. Like, it just feels like Sam is projecting a lot of deeper feelings onto this dog and this particular situation.
Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around it, and I'm wondering if, like, as we learn more, it'll make more sense. But it's like the first time he seems to be, like, worried about something that isn't supernatural or, like, personal adjacent. And it just leads to a very frantic scene, as you've described.
And just to kind of like stay with this storyline, because there are so many different storylines in this episode, like, it can be a little difficult to follow. I want to stay with Sam, the dog, and Amelia here, because Amelia asks Sam, like, don't you think you're responsible? Which, like, oh my god, I love when the theme of the show shows up in the dialogue. This is kind of what Sam and Dean do as hunters, right? Like, they hunt things, they save people. But sometimes they leave the people in pretty questionable condition, like, especially if those people happen to be possessed by demons, for example. So, like, they take these people to the hospital when they need it, and then they just kind of, like, leave them to deal with the repercussions of having been possessed by said demons and then brutalized by, like, two large hunter hunks in flannel. This is sort of like what Amelia is saying about the dog, right? Like, don't you think you're responsible for the harm that you cause? Like, you think you're a hero for taking it to the hospital and then peacing out? I just think that she's not wrong about that. Even though she doesn't know anything about Sam, and this is entirely her projecting her own shit onto this situation, I kind of love that it's a realization moment for Sam of like, oh,
That's what I'm predicting. So, like, again, like, I think with this episode specifically, what I'm expecting to see is this, like, new level of Sam understanding and, like, a new outlook on life for him through Amelia and this dog. He just kind of dropped everything post season 7. Like, I'm genuinely shocked that he never even tried to look for Dean or find someone who might be able to help. Like, it really feels like a lack of responsibility. And I know, like, they bring it up and they have this whole pact of, like, don't go looking for each other, but just completely, like, but, like, just to not do anything seems so out of character given the Sam we know and the Sam we've seen in past episodes, i.e. the Trickster episode. You know, part of me thinks that we, like, we're gonna learn more. Like, I'm convinced we have to learn more about this year to make this make sense. Otherwise, I am so angry.
I mean, listen, Drew, like, there are just so many fans of the show who feel just like you about this. And I completely, completely get it. Now, because we're in story time and we're trying to understand this as if, like, Sam and Dean were real people, I'm going to argue, like, the other side of that. But I just really want to acknowledge fully and entirely that I think that there's a really good critical conversation to be had about Sam's characterization here. But let's just sidestep that for a moment. Let's put a pin in that.
Understandable.
So earlier we talked about responsibility being a promise made, right? And the word promise also shows up in the dialogue, which I was losing my mind over. When Sam and Dean are arguing about Sam not looking for Dean, Sam says, look, I did what we promised we'd do. I moved on. I lived my life. And here's the thing, like, I absolutely do think that Sam should have looked for Dean. Like, I'm never going to say the opposite. I also think that Sam or Dean, and Dean, actually, accepting the death of the other is actually a huge sign of growth. Like, in real life, where people don't come back from death or from purgatory, accepting the death of a loved one is like a responsibility that we have to ourselves and to the people around us. And Sam is keeping that promise by accepting what he thinks is Dean's death.
I agree. I think it's a, like, huge growth moment for Sam to understand the finality of things and not try to cheat death. But given all of the knowledge he has at that time, he is aware that Dean is in purgatory. Not that Dean just spontaneously died. That's the end. He thinks he's in purgatory, no? Does Crowley not allude to it?
Well, maybe he does, but Dean is the one who says, turns out that standing too close to exploding dick sends you to purgatory.
Oh, true. Yes. My forgiveness for Sam is going up from, like, 1% to, like...
to, like, 1.5.
I'll give the whole percent on that one.
Okay. That's very generous of you.
I really had this, like, mental image of, like, Sam understanding he was in purgatory. So the idea of, like, not looking for him seemed worse. But if he was really just in a scenario of, like, this scenario caused the death of my brother, there's nothing I can do, and he made me promise to not go after him, I think in that case, I'm a little more understanding of it. But I still feel for a world that is so good about, like, for characters who are so used to death not being the final straw, to not even spend, like, even if Sam had said, like, I spent the first, like, month looking for things and nothing came up, and I had to move on, I'd be like, that makes sense, fine.
I completely agree with you. And this is where I'm mad at Sam, because I agree with you that he should have looked for Dean, even if it was for 2 weeks, you know? Like, doesn't matter. Like, look him up in the phone book for fuck's sakes, you know? Like, just try.
There's a period where you mourn the death of somebody. You don't just instantly move on. Again, there is that empty missing year where things might come into understanding for me and I might feel more sympathy, but I'm getting the vibe less and less so.
That's kind of why, for me, like, both kind of coexist within what how I think of Sam in this particular situation. Like, I think he should have looked for Dean. At the same time, I understand why he did not. So it's like, I'm kind of able to look at it a little bit from both Sam and Dean's perspective for this particular thing. Because there's something else we're going to talk about where I'm, like, really ticked off at him.
So let's finish up with Sam then, because I want to talk about the last bit of responsibility he shirked. abandoning Kevin. And this one feels like worse, because Kevin is just some poor kid who's been dragged into what I'm calling their fight out of his control. And Sam just turned off and ditched all of his phones and never, like, even thought to look for him. Like, the Dean situation, okay, yes, he's dead or gone or whatever. But, like, Kevin is blatantly alive. He knows where or who he's with. Like, while it may sound crazy, I get, like, that he's trying to, like, get out of the life. But, like, this lack of care or responsibility, even just, like, as a human, forget being a hunter, and someone who has been, like, thrown into this shit show in Kevin, and just ignoring that feels so wrong to me.
This is where I get really mad at Sam. Because, like, I can rationalize the Dean thing, even if I'm not entirely on board with it. I can rationalize it. But abandoning Kevin is some straight-up John shit to me.
Yeah.
Dean agrees with me here, because he tells him, like, he was our responsibility and you couldn't answer the damn phone. Which, like, this was Dean. This was Dean in season one, leaving message after message on John's answering machine and not getting a single call back. And now he's watching his brother doing the same thing to someone they were supposed to protect.
Oh no, I was all excited for a Kevin and Sam connection through their being so similar, but it just made Sam worse.
That's where I'm like, uh-uh. No, no, no.
Of the two, it's the bigger sin.
Right, because I can understand if he's like, oh, Dean is dead. Okay, all right, like, that, I get that.
But this poor kid who was, like, thrown in the line of duty and under my, like, tutelage, who, like, has risked his life to help people, has been kidnapped by a guy I personally know.
And have helped in the fucking past! Like, anyway, I have issues with Sam this season. Understandably, everybody does.
I'm in a scenario where I'm still, like, the door is open for that relationship with Sam and myself to be fixed.
Fair.
Like, I can't imagine the scenario, but, like, the show could do something and make me go, okay, I'm starting to side with Sam a little bit more. But, it'll take some digging. Can we move on to Dean? So, of course, Sam couldn't be the only one with a mysterious, you know, year missing. And we slowly get that revealed by Dean. Dean's is harder to get a read on, and I do not feel as if his actions in Purgatory lead to not having Cass, and rather was, like, a loss he suffered, and, like, due to shitty circumstances, like, he had to move on from it, which, again, like, the whole missing Cass thing is still a huge, like, red flag for me. And while Sam's mystery over this last year has me feeling like I need to know more to understand him and accept him, Dean's I've already kind of accepted, but I feel like I'm missing details.
Oh yeah, we're definitely missing some big details for Dean, for sure. One thing that we do see in Purgatory is Dean bargaining with Benny to look for Cass before they go. And I do want to highlight that, because it shows that Dean feels responsible for getting Cass out of Purgatory. And again, like, their loyalty to each other is, like, really beautiful, even through all of the messiness of Purgatory.
Like, ultimately, this is still his boyfriend who's equally as trapped here as he is. Again, like, there could be a big reveal that Cass is still in Purgatory because Dean had to leave him behind and it was Dean's choice to do so, in which case, fuck, that's a problem. Or did Cass make a choice to stay behind because he thinks he could fix something in Dean and him? Like, Dean had to go. Like, again, there are so many, like, possible strands this could take that I have yet to make up a decision of how I feel about Cass not coming back or where they ended. And I want those details. And in the meantime, I have accepted what we know of at least Dean has done. Although, as we'll get to later, this episode raises some questions. But we do sort of start to see, you know, Dean making connections with this new Benny, who I predicted in the past might have been a dog. While I was right about there being a dog, it wasn't Benny.
Same episode, though. Same season. That was honestly, like, really close.
Yeah, but if I'm not going to get a dog, I will take sexy Louisiana vampire. That is definitely checking some boxes for me. And he seems to have, like, joined forces with In Purgatory and seemingly built a bond sort of thing for me. I need to know more. Because while I like Benny so far, I don't know Dean to trust someone willingly, especially a vampire, especially in Purgatory, to the point of, like, trusting him enough to, like, bring him back to the real, the human world. He seems to have some kind of responsibility for Benny when he references this keeping your nose clean line, which, again, like, right away is like, you're a vampire, you're with humans again, don't be an idiot. But then Benny repeats the line to Dean, making me feel like there's more to this relationship going both ways, and I want to know so many things.
Drew, I am so excited to get into this with you because, like, wow. Again, like, I was rewatching this episode and just, like, I had to, like, get up from my desk every few minutes because I was getting so worked up about this. Like, I agree with you. Dean had his responsibility. Like, he made a promise to Benny to get him out of Purgatory, and he did, right? And then when they part ways, it feels like a breakup, which is interesting because when you read the script, it feels heavy, you know? Like, so then this is goodbye, whatever, you know, handshake, hug. But then the way that it appears on screen isn't just heavy. It's really romantic, too. Like, it really comes across to me as, like, a couple breaking up after agreeing to finish a project together. Like, kind of when people break up, like, mid-kitchen renovations, and then they decide to finish the kitchen before divorcing and selling the house. Like, this really feels like that to me. And in a way, it really speaks to, like, keeping the promise of the responsibilities that you took on together.
You know what? Like, I don't think in the moment I was too busy trying to, like, put puzzle pieces together in, like, a frantic, like, what's happening, that I didn't have the moment to, like, but yeah, like, the thing that stuck out to me was, like, the fact that, like, they separate and there's kind of this, like, hug in, like, we, like, I think a part of me read it less romantically and more like two soldiers coming back from war together. Like, we got through this together. Thank you. Like, you were my brother. And it's weird because I think I kind of read it as a bit of a brotherly bond as well. But on reflection, like, there definitely is something very, very Dean's queer romantic side coming through in this that makes, yeah. And then I will admit, Benny calling him back at the end of the episode and the way it kind of flustered Dean definitely had more romantic, you know, like, that's when I started to pick it up.
Like you said, there's the little secret phone call, like, at the end of the episode, right? Where he, like, hangs up the phone because he doesn't want Sam to know. And then he calls him back when he's all alone. And I just want to mention that, like, we've seen one of the brothers doing that before in season 4. And it was Sam with Ruby. Because, like, isn't this something that Dean should be mentioning to Sam? Like, he's having Sam tell him about the girl that he met last year. Shouldn't he be telling him about the boy that he met? Like, why is this a secret?
Oh my god, you just put a very terrible egg in my head. What happened the last time one of them had a secret romantic crush on a thing that could be hunted? God, I hate them so much, these two. Can we move on to the third person in this cast who isn't an idiot this season so far?
Yes, we do need to talk about Kevin, which is the title of this episode. See what I did?
Oh, this poor kid had, like, for over the last year, reinvent himself after outsmarting the king of bloody hell and just sort of, like, receiving bits of knowledge from God, maybe? You know, from his calls to Sam, it feels like he felt that they were a team, that he felt he was part of the team with them. And then suddenly finds out that either one, Sam is dead, or two, Sam really was never my friend and didn't care about me. You know, like, it feels like he felt that his being kidnapped should have been a bigger deal for Sam. But as we all know, Sam just sort of didn't. And I feel like we hear it in Kevin's drunk call more than anything else, that if there was any responsibility for Sam to save him, it was a mistake, and Kevin has accepted he is on his own. And while I agree that it has not necessarily, it shouldn't be Sam's responsibility to have to save some kid who was thrown in his life, it's kind of a dick move.
Is more of a way for him to convince himself than really absolving Sam of responsibility?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Which is extremely sad to me, because, like, it really draws again on how, like, Sam and Dean were feeling when John just like fucked off in season one. Like they were like trying to justify his behavior and Kevin is doing the same thing. And it's really heartbreaking to see that cycle continue.
Kevin, like, he's accepted his place as the prophet and almost picked up the mantle of responsibility to save the Earth from demons. And we even see him like lose his love interest in an act of defiance, seeing him put the safety of the planet and others before his own wants or needs, which is an incredibly Sam and Dean move to do. You know, he's been tasked with something greater and feels responsible to see it through, despite his own personal pains or losses, which is very much the kind of like opposite of what Sam is doing this season, in that he was the chosen one, or at least felt he was the chosen one, and now he's kind of just said, like, I guess I'm not. I'm done. Bye.
Like, he does a fantastic job at them with the limited resources and limited knowledge that he has. Not that it's fair, but he does. And I think it also speaks to, like, the fact that there are some responsibilities that we do not want, or that we inherit from structural things or from structures within society. Like, I don't want to pay rent every goddamn month, but I live in a capitalist world through no choice of my own. And so I'm beholden to the rules of that world. And I also have a child to whom I am responsible in terms of providing safety and stability. And so rent it is. In the case of Kevin, he doesn't want to be a prophet, yet he doesn't have a choice in the matter in this case. We are now entering the critical time segment of our podcast, where we look at Supernatural not as if it was happening to real people, but really more from a production standpoint, looking at writing, acting, producing, and editing choices. Each week, we'll focus on one important production decision in the episode and look at how it affects the episode itself, the bigger story, or the legacy of the show. We have officially entered Jeremy Carver's tenure as a showrunner, aka the Carver era, and what a start. It's really interesting because no matter how you feel about this episode, like, it elicits a reaction, right? Like, no one is like, meh, about it. It's either like you love it or you hate it, or kind of both, right? Or like you're really mad at Sam, or you're really mad at Dean, or you're really mad, like, you're just really mad. Like, there's just a lot of angst in this episode. So I do want to quickly go over the episodes that Jeremy Carver wrote in previous seasons. So in season 3, he wrote Sin City with Robert Singer. He wrote A Very Supernatural Christmas. He wrote Mystery Spot with Emily McLaughlin, Long Distance Call. He wrote In the Beginning in season 4, Family Remains, Death Takes a Holiday, and The Rapture. And then in season 5, he wrote Free to Be You and Me, Changing Channels, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, and Point of No Return. So I do want to point out that he wrote the episode where Sam goes all hyper-focused on finding Dean, and yet he still chose to write this episode in the season the way that it is written. Like, this was a conscious choice, right? So let's keep that in mind. Whether we agree or disagree with it, it is the way it is. And let's try to see what we can make sense out of that, what meaning we can make out of that. He also wrote Free to Be You and Me, which we both called incredibly gay at the time. So again, what we saw and what we heard on screen was a conscious choice, right? Let's keep that in mind as well. And I think that it was also a conscious choice to tap a writer who was involved in the early seasons, but not in seasons 6 and 7. And I think this was, like, in a way, the show's promise to its audience that it was going to distance itself from that era. And the promise is in the narrative, too. Like, we're already starting to see, like, some of the big brushstrokes of this season. And one of them is some of the parallels with season 4 that we're already starting to see and that we talked about a little bit briefly. But another parallel that was set up in this episode is the idea of romantic loss. Sam loses Amelia, Kevin loses Channing, and Dean loses Benny. So let's see where that takes us.
First, if I can reflect with you in a second on the list of episodes, it, right away, the first I noticed was like, huh, nothing since season 5? That seems like a choice.
It was a choice, absolutely.
And generally a very good list of episodes, all ones, whether they were major story point ones or ones I particularly enjoyed, with one major exception. I am very intrigued to have this gentleman as our showrunner. This week we have a message from Jack. Before we listen to it, we want to remind you to send us a 3-minute voicemail. To respond to anything we discussed today or ask us a question, you can use the recording app on your phone and email us the recording at carryingwayward@gmail.com.
Hi, sorry. This is Jack, aka C Queen Natural from TikTok, and I just wanted to say I love your podcast. And also, so I know you're not going to be getting here for like a significant amount of time, but I am really excited for when you finally get to season 7, because not only is it one of my favorite seasons, I'm also specifically really curious to hear what you think about the episode season 7, Time for a Wedding, because I think it is a really good episode. And as much as I hate it, it's a good episode. Yeah, I was just curious to hear your thoughts about it, and just generally the common theme of Sam's ability to choose for himself being stolen from him throughout the show. Thank you.
Jack, I have to start with a huge apology, because I remember getting this voicemail a while ago and being like, okay, and I labeled it like, you know, Jack, season 7, Time for a Wedding, like it was labeled, but somehow it ended up in a different folder and I just recently found this voicemail. And so my apologies to you, my personal apologies to you for not having listened to this voicemail earlier. We listen to every voicemail that we get, so thank you so, so much for sending it in. We really appreciate it. Yeah, second of all, I suppose that you heard the episode. I hope you liked it. I absolutely agree with you. I don't like what happens in the episode, but I agree that it's such a beautifully crafted episode. Like, it's well made. We even talked about it in our recap episode, actually, funny enough. That was one of the episodes that was kind of like singled out. I'm particularly happy that you're reminding us of this idea of Sam's ability to choose for himself being constantly removed from him, because in this episode, he has made some very serious choices for himself, and people are not thrilled about it. I think it's important for us to kind of live in that tension of being like, you know, we want Sam to be able to make his choices, but then there's a part of us that's like, but not those ones, you know? And so, like, where's that line between, like, you know, wanting autonomy for somebody, but also like feeling like we're entitled to judge their choices? And I don't know, like, it makes me reflect on my own reaction to Sam in this episode, I think. So thank you for kind of like bringing up a mirror to me. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, Jack, thank you. One, for this message, and two, for now building the headcanon that our Gmail inbox is possessed by a spirit who knows better than us, so actively hid this recording until now, because I really think, again, that, like, magic of, like, I've called Mary a witch for it before, and now I'm thinking maybe it's a ghost in the machine, pun and obvious pun.
Maybe it's from Long Distance Call. The banana phone!
The banana phone ghost is in our Gmails. The lore we're building. But what I wanted to bring up, though, is the idea of, like, Sam's choice or lack thereof. And we're in an episode now where Sam has basically made a choice that, like, other characters have, like, encouraged other hunters to make, to get out of the game, to stop, to give up, to walk away, to find a real life. And here we go, Sam doing it. And again, I've said it before and I'll repeat it again until I'm proven wrong. I'm okay with this while being mad until I get more context for this missing year to maybe fill in that gap and make me go, okay, I get it more. Or no, I'm mad at Sam, or why I centered myself there. But to go back to your actual question, though, and I really, again, like we said, it came up in the recap because the episode just stood out for me in season 7 as such a beautifully crafted episode, from lighting to color to just, again, the acting chops in Sam, having him play like this out of reality version of himself. It's amazing when an episode can make you feel one way and the other so, like, diametrically, Because, yeah, I agree. Like, I despise the way Becky is treated as a character. I hate the way her arc has gone. I am so upset that a character who was a stand-in for the fans was treated like such garbage. But Sam's acting, Dean's reactions to it, bringing in Garth, even just Crowley's little bit about, like, you know, demon loyalty to, like, following the rules. Like, all of it is so good. And even, like, it's a really good episode. It ultimately is a fantastically put together episode and is definitely one of the shining gems of season 7. So thank you for letting us talk about it again.
Drew, do you have any reflection and call to action this week?
Yeah. Responsibility should not be a one-way road, I feel. I often find myself, when I have something I'm responsible for, it almost feels like a chore or a task I have to do. But the reality is, if it's your responsibility, it's something that you've agreed to or have come to. So for myself, my reflection and my call to action this week is that I need to reevaluate my responsibilities when I feel like one doesn't sit right with me or feels like it's not good anymore. Why is that the case? If it's something that I've committed to or something that I've promised somebody and is my responsibility, why is it not feeling right?
I love that. That's really profound. Thank you.
Thank you. And your reflection and call to action this week?
I also felt really called by this idea of responsibility as a promise, and it's kind of making me shift my perception of responsibility to something that's a lot less, you know, boring and chore-like, to use your words, because I really like that, and that's how I feel about some of my responsibilities as well, to something that's a lot more like sacred or honorable in a way. It reminds me of the things that I am beholden to as well, right? Like, the things that I am responsible for are the things that, like, thrive only with my help, kind of thing. It's making me think about, like, what responsibilities I have to myself as well, what promises I've made to myself, or what promises I should be making to myself as someone that I am beholden to as well. This was Carrying Wayward, a Supernatural podcast produced by Rochelle Castellano, hosted by Drew Shulman and Marie Vigourou. Thank you to everyone supporting us on Ko-fi or Patreon, especially our Bunker supporters, Elle, Jeremiah Thomas, and Simone. We'd also like to thank Jake Lionheart for our music and Jacqueline Tucci for additional sound editing. Head over to carryingwayward.com to become a patron or a Ko-fi subscriber, and for our merch store and our socials. And write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Carry on, our wayward friends.